I'm Paul Edwards from Miami, Florida, and tonight on Tuesday Topics, we're going to discuss a subject which is near and dear to the heart of many people who are blind and visually impaired, and that is the issue of travel. How do you get around? How do you get from place to place? What are some of the dangers you face as a blind person? What are some of the amazing and amusing incidents that have occurred to those of us who are blind who travel? And what are some of the tips that we can offer others that might make traveling easier? Those are some of the questions that we'll be exploring tonight in Tuesday Topics. But before we do all of that, we have the pleasure of having among us someone who is actually in the travel industry and who happens to be blind. And I felt that it might be appropriate for us to spend a few minutes talking with him about, first, how he does his job, second, perhaps some tips that he may have for those of us who are blind and who are traveling. So it gives me great pleasure to welcome to Tuesday Topics Mr. Gary Metzler. Gary, maybe you could start off by telling us a little bit about what a travel agent does and maybe a little bit, too, about how people can get in touch with you.
I'm the president of Out-of-Sight Travel Incorporated. We're here in Florida. And my wife and I run the agency. And I think, according to an organization, I'm the only blind owner of a travel agency. There's others that are like outside sales agents, but I'm the only one that I know of that, you know, actually is the owner. But we're what a travel agent does is helps the individual get the best possible trip they can. And in our case, since we specialize in blindness, we can help get itineraries in Braille, because I'm in ownership of a Juliet Pro embosser. We can do it in large print and whatever format is needed. That's a travel agent basically is the guy that's supposed to know the best destinations. And in our case, being blind, we have, and especially me, I travel with a guide dog. And you have to know what destinations are guide dog friendly and what paperwork and documentation you need to get into a country. And that's in a nutshell. Excuse me, And we started our company back in 2002. So it's a new concept. You know, like I say, there's been a lot of outside sales agents that are blind, but I'm the only one I know of that actually an owner operator. It's a lot of fun. We get to go a lot of different places and check out different itineraries and, you know, do ship inspections to make sure that ships are accessible. So, you know, it's a blast. You can reach Jackie at drtravel@bellsouth.net. And the phone number, the 800 number is 866-338-8747. That actually works out to the word trip. So it's 866-338-8747. And we have a website that's outofsighttravel.com. 866-338-8747.
Let's move on and talk about traveling as a blind person. Are there any things that folks would like to tell us about, perhaps to begin with, that have been kind of amusing when they've been traveling?
Well, this is Gary W. from Lansing, Michigan. There was an amusing case when I was at Disneyland. We went through the rides and all the things that was quite interesting back about 30 years ago. And I did, in fact, get a chance to see Snow White, and she let me, I guess she let me touch her and everything, you know, but I suppose that might be considered amusing, I don't know, but the whole Disneyland thing was quite an interesting experience, you know, and I also went to Disney World later on in Florida, but they have a lot of interesting things there to look at and to take advantage of, you know, in their parks.
Cool. Well, it might have been amusing for you. I'm not sure it was for Snow White, Gary, but who knows?
Well, probably the amusing thing that happened to me was just recently on the cruise I just went on. I've got a new guide dog. I've had Sidian just since October, so we're still a pretty new team. And Sidian actually has had a couple of handlers before me. And we were on the cruise ship, and he's very friendly. And I was walking through the ship going through the casino going towards the main dining area. And as I was walking through one of the little areas, where the lounges, there were a couple of guys standing there talking, and as we were going by, and they said, "Oh, what a beautiful dog. He's just beautiful." And the next thing I know, I'm standing right in front of them, And I told City, and I said, I know you think that when people talk about you that you need to be real friendly, but I don't really think I want to get this close and personal.
My experience with the cruise is my ex-husband had a little bit more toleration for the little one-night armed bandits in the little small room. That's a little bit too much noise for me. And I enjoy the freedom of roaming with the boat and whenever I want to and do what I please and that kind of thing. It was kind of fun.
We have been on 3 cruises, Dave and I. Once, and I've been on a couple myself, by myself and with others. But cruising, I really enjoy cruising. The first cruise we went on was to Ensenada, Mexico, with the two of us. The next was with my mother, and the third of the 3 that we took was with an ACB group, a DeMar sponsored group, and I think that in all of them, we did pretty much what we wanted on our own. In fact, the group that went to Ensenada, we changed our dinner seatings, the group leader, if you will, and this was not a blind group. He put everybody on early seating, but he said, hey, anybody who wants to change it can change it. I just did this so the dining room would have an idea. Well, we promptly changed to late. And with my mother, we had a late seating, and we had a great time. We all, the two of us got out, got off the ship, did what we would, walked along the streets, and did what we would in any travel situation, I think. In Cozumel, granted, they were doing some construction, so Dave and I was glad Dave was there, because we were pretty much on our own. And that was fine, except that Dave had gone earlier on another excursion, so I waited until he got back. But we went shopping, and we just had dinner, and we just had a great time. But we did not feel, and this is the two of us, but we did not feel that we needed anybody guiding us, if you will. And as for trains, we do enjoy trains. We took a cross-country train, a cross-country trip. Well, we flew from Fresno to New York, and then we took a train from New York to Key West, or to Miami, with stops along the way to visit relatives and friends. So we've enjoyed traveling, and again, we haven't needed ourselves extra accommodations.
And she forgets to mention that we've also taken the train from San Francisco up to Seattle, up to Tacoma, Washington. That was with the dog. That was fun. Well, I've done most of our travel with the dog. The only one we did not take the dog on, in fact, was the ACB cruise when we went to Cozumel. Cozumel, Cayman, and Jamaica. The thing that I felt was that, as a matter of fact, I felt that I probably was a little bit, if nothing, I felt we were a little bit stifled on the ACB cruise compared to what we were on the other two.
This is Rachel in Orlando, and I think one of the neatest things for me about traveling is all the people that I've had an opportunity to meet. Just about a year ago, I traveled to the UK, quite a long flight, but the people that I was sitting with on the plane, they were so neat. I mean, we must have talked the whole way. We've exchanged emails. We've sent emails back and forth since I've been back. They lived over in the UK, and it was really nice. And I found this to be true in several instances. One time I went to Jamaica and met up with some people. And the fact that I'm blind really didn't come into play much at all, which I obviously acknowledge the fact that I'm blind. And obviously they acknowledge the fact that I'm blind. But, you know, the conversation didn't center around that, which was really nice. I was a person first, and I just happened to be traveling. I had a couple on another trip, actually, to the UK that actually went with me to my next plane, and we also exchanged emails. So it's just kind of really neat to meet all the people out there that that you meet just kind of in the travels.
I think probably for me the fun part about traveling is the fact of meeting people, and, you know, even especially on cruises, because you do, you get a chance to meet a lot of different people. Except, of course, now on this last one, because this was the first time I went with a group, and of course, sitting at our table, we were sitting with other people from the, you know, ACB. But on other cruises I've been on, you know, I've sat at a table with whoever they put there, and you know, you actually do develop some friendships, and of course, you know, at some point you talk about the blindness, but then it's there, you know, it's out on the table, it's there, and then that's it. And you know, you find you actually have other interesting hobbies and interests together, and you know, and I and then you develop friendships, and then even when you go off the cruise ship, like into ports and stuff, I always found that people then were just, you know, more than willing to go with and just ask how they could help it, and you know, we're just, you know, very kind and very friendly, and you do develop friendships, and I'm a people person, so that's what I enjoy about it.
This is Brian from Boston, and I also agree that people make all the difference. I've met, let's see, a cellist trying to get to a concert, a guy who's worked all his life for a tobacco company. We had a fascinating conversation on the evils of tobacco and whether or not tobacco companies should be sued, but it was very amicable. We enjoyed the conversation, even though we didn't persuade one another of the other person's view. Let's see, probably the strangest companion I ever had by accident was I was bumped up to first class, and the guy next to me was an airline pilot flying what they call deadhead back to his home town. And he was telling me all the pluses and minuses of the particular aircraft we were on. I'm glad I'm a very comfortable flyer, or I wouldn't be now.
Dave Williams from the UK, and I guess I'll stick with the theme of people talking about intriguing travel experiences and people that they've met. I guess this kind of doesn't necessarily relate to blindness, although this kind of does a little bit. Yeah, in December I went to the 6th General Assembly of the World Blind Union. And the remarkable thing about that wasn't that this was an international convention of blind people, and it, you know, it could have been people, you know, with no disability or, you know, a range of disabilities. That wasn't the point really that I wanted to make. The point I wanted to make was that Jeff Zhang, who was also there providing the ACB radio coverage with me, he and I started playing a game where we started ticking off countries, and it was how many people from how many different countries could you meet in one day. And it was just remarkable. People there from, as I say, about 150 countries. And I had, you know, I mean, some of the countries I'd never even heard of. Liberia, you know, who lives in Liberia? I don't know. And so you would meet these fascinating people with different, totally different perspectives on life, totally different opportunities in terms of their education, in terms of their employment prospects, in terms of their economy. You know, what I thought, you know, was fairly inexpensive would be, you know, perhaps a year's salary for somebody. Meeting people from places like India and China, which are you know, are widely thought to be the superpowers of the 21st century. You know, I thought I was doing rather well. I thought I was broadening my horizons. And we were hanging out with a guy called Bill Jolly from Melbourne in Australia. And he's a really nice guy, remarkable character. He's the head of the Guide Dogs Association in Australia. And he's also, I think he's head of their Braille Association as well. And Bill Jolly is one of the most well-traveled blind people that I've ever come across. And he'd been to something like, and this figure, it could be slightly inaccurate, but I'm sure he said, and I have no cause to disbelieve it, I'm sure he said he visited in his life somewhere in the region of 60 or 70 countries. Quite a frightening, quite astonishing amount. I think I'm just breaking into double figures now, you know, myself, and I mean, I'm only 28, so I, you know, I've still got a long way to go, but truly remarkable. But then, you know, that's the kind of the grandiose travel tale of, you know, how wonderful it is and how amazing it is. But you know, you can meet some of the most intriguing people in the oddest places. First time I ever visited New York, I was with a great buddy of mine, a guy called Rob, who I went to university with, and we always said when we were at university, we used to get ridiculously and recklessly drunk and talk about the day when we would go to New York, man, you know, when we had the money, you know, we would go to New York. So anyway, once we both got a bit of work and some income, we found ourselves in New York, and we did the whole, you know, the kind of the tourist bit. You know, we did the Empire State Building, Statue of Liberty, you know, Central Park. We went to see the Imagine Mosaic in Central Park. We visited many of the great buildings and monuments that exist on Manhattan. And we had this idea, I don't know where it came from, that we wanted to go to Staten Island. And I'd already been told by people that live in New York that, look, there's nothing to see on Staten Island. And the trouble is, it's like, you know, if you tell somebody not to, you know, not to put their ear to the wall or not to go and have a kind of nosy out the window, you've got to do it. You know, it's kind of what's on the other side of the fence. You've just got to go and see. And everybody told me, no, don't go to Staten Island. No, nothing to see there, you know. And, you know, move along now. So anyway, we went and got on the Staten Island ferry and went across there. And we got to Staten Island. And anyway, everyone kind of emptied out of the ferry terminal and got onto the buses and all the rest of it. And we were sort of hanging around with a map and not really knowing what to do with ourselves. And, you know, Rob was sort of trying to figure out which way up the map should go. And I said, Rob, look, you know, forget the map. You know, I'm better at navigating than you are, and I'm blind. Why don't we just get on the first bus that comes in, and then, you know, when something interesting happens, we'll get off and, you know, see where we are. And so we did that. We got on this bus, and then we got on this bus, and I said, so go on. I said, well, you know, tell me what you see. And he said, well, it's just houses. There's nothing here. And so we stayed on the bus. And I said, no, what are you saying, Rob? And he said, just have. And we got off the bus at the bus terminal. We went all the way to the bottom of Staten Island. We got off at the bus terminus and walked along. And, you know, it was really a kind of a failed sort of mission. You know, we thought we were going to find something, you know, intriguing on Staten Island, and everything anyone had told us about is absolutely right. It's just residential. There's nothing to see. There's nowhere to go. Absolutely. And I apologize if anybody's here from Staten Island. But what really made up for it, and what left me with a wry smile for days and possibly months afterwards, was I went to the hot dog stand at the bus terminal, and we met this guy who regaled us of tales of his various visitors that he'd had over the years. And my friend Rob spied amongst this guy's armory a bottle of sauce called the hottest sauce, and you can actually buy this on the internet. And we bought ourselves a couple of bottles of this stuff, and the guy regaled us of tales about how they met this big Mexican truck driver who very manfully squeezed dollops of this stuff all over his dog and, you know, proceeded to wolf it down and immediately broke out into a sweat, but, you know, tried to pretend that it really wasn't bothering him at all. So, you know, sometimes it can be the simplest things, you know, in the oddest places that are, you know, are the most amusing.
Yeah, I agree with you, David. When I went to Bombay, India, on behalf of ACB and the World Blind Union, most of the trip from New York City to Bombay, I had the same seatmate. He was an Indian gentleman going back because in order to keep his visa proper, he had to go back home every so often. So he was one of those types of workers. And I got the most incredible history lesson, especially religious history of India, on the way there that made, once I arrived, everything make a great deal more sense. One kind of negative, and I say it negative, although I'm going to tell it, I hope, as a humorous story, negative experience I had was when I was flying back from Athens, Greece, after being there to do some computer teaching one time. And I'm a guide dog user, and I got special permission to bring my dog with me to Greece, since there were no other guide dogs in Greece at the time, at least. And everything went incredibly well the whole time I was there. And on the way back, I was walking down the concourse out to the gate to catch my plane. And this guy steps in front of me and says, "No, dog, no dog, dog in cage," in this very thick Greek accent. And so I tried to explain to the gentleman that this, in fact, was a guide dog and I had a special letter. "No," he says, "dog in cage." And so I again tried to explain to him and show him my letter from the transportation director of Greece, and "No, dog cage." And this real quiet individual said, "Sir, you may want to take him up on his advice. He's a guard and he has a machine gun in his hands." So I turned around and I went back to the ticket counter and explained to them about the man in the crate. And they just took my passport, sat me down for a moment, said, "We'll work it out." And then they came back and said, "Just follow us. Don't ask any questions." Gave me back my passport, walked me out back doors out onto the tarmac, and had me sit in this van. which then was filled up with a bunch of non-English speaking Greeks that drove off with me in the van. And it turned out they drove me out to the plane, and I got on the plane before it pulled up to the gate. So that's how I got around security.
On the international dateline, I've got some friends on the internet as well as myself that would like to know where that is.
The international dateline is just the point at which the day changes from today to tomorrow, or from tomorrow to yesterday, or today to yesterday. That makes more sense. And it's of course in different places at different points in the world, depending on where you're going. So it's kind of an imaginary line that wanders around the world. Well, I have the mic. Let me sort of share a story that Dave Williams reminded me of. When I finished my university degree, I had this good friend of mine and I. He was actually from the UK, and he and I decided that we were going to go on a trip to celebrate the fact that we'd gotten our degrees. And so we flew to the east coast of Mexico, and then proceeded to tour all of the ruins there and kind of climb around the pyramids and that sort of stuff, and then took buses all over Mexico, which was quite an experience, because buses in Mexico are very different from things that are associated with tourists. There were at least as many chickens on most buses as there were people, and you often had sheep and goats on the buses as well. It was really quite exciting. And one of the highlights of our trip is I used to be a roller coaster freak, and the largest wooden roller coaster in the world at that point was in the Chapultepec Amusement Park in Mexico City. So we got to Mexico City and we settled into our hotel, and we decided, okay, we're going to go to Chapultepec and ride this roller coaster. So we get outside the hotel and we say, we want to go to Chapultepec. Should we take a cab? Oh, no, senor, it's very close. You can walk. Well, 8 miles later, we finally get to Chapultepec, and we arrive there, and we say, we've been walking for the last 2 hours, and we came all this way just to ride on the roller coaster. So the guy says, oh, I'm so sorry, senor, but you know, the roller coaster, she's not open. She's being repaired now, so you cannot ride on the roller coaster. I said, oh, gee. Very unhappy. So it's this long conversation that goes on in Spanish, and they say, senor, you know, we decide, because it's you, we're going to allow you to ride on the roller coaster because we are going to test it now, so you can ride on the roller coaster. It's okay. So I had one of these, the very early Philips cassette recorders, and I put a cassette in, and we got on the roller coaster, and I decided that I was going to record this wonderful description of my ride on the roller coaster. So, okay, well, we're going up this rather steep hill at the moment, and it's getting much steeper now, and goodness, all the hill is still going on. Boy, this is a long hill. We're actually getting pretty high. It's no wonder they call this the biggest roller coaster in the world. Wow, we're still going up this hill. This is pretty amazing. Ooh. Boy, the hill's getting steeper, and we're still climbing. Wow, this is amazing. Well, I think we're getting to the top now. We're still going up, still going up. Getting to the top now. Yeah, we're getting to the top. And we got to the top of the hill, and we started going down. And the only other statement on the tape for the rest of the recording was the one comment I made as we started down, which was, oh shit! I wanted to ask Dave a question. He said, and maybe we'll get Alice to comment on this afterwards as well, that the most stifling cruise he was on was the ACB cruise, and Dave, perhaps you could tell us why.
Okay, but I'll tell you what, before I do, I'd like to give Karen a little more of an explanation of the international dateline, because she did ask the question, and I think it's rather important. Karen, I don't know where you live, but the world is divided, and this happened in the late 1800s when we went away. You're in Texas, okay? When we went away from what was called Sun Time, and it went to standard time zones. And the world at that point was divided into 24 15-degree zones, and they were called meridians. You live in a meridian. I live in a meridian. the Prime Meridian was, well, they didn't know where to put it. Finally, I don't know how it was decided, the Prime Meridian went through Greenwich, England at the time. That was decided, and it was then there. And so the time zone there was for many years called GMT, Greenwich Mean Time. That has now been changed to Coordinated Universal Time. Okay, so that's the Prime Meridian. The international dateline is exactly opposite to that in the world. It's exactly the opposite. It's like if the world were a circle, which is not exactly, but it would be exactly on the other side of the world. So when you cross the Pacific, that's where you cross the international dateline. And the time zones are actually 12 hours apart if you go through the motions there. The international dateline goes through, for example, Western Samoa. It goes in and out to New Zealand is the furthest east, shall we say, country immediately across the dateline. It's about furthest east, and as you go farther west, and as I said, it's all broken down into latitude and longitude, and so. But that's the dateline. I've also traveled across the country of Mexico on a bus, and all I can say is we were on the first class buses. We didn't have chickens on our bus because we took it from Tijuana to Mexico City, and it was okay. We drank tequila, but otherwise it was fairly good. Okay, I almost got run over in Mexico City, but that's a long story too. They don't believe in traffic laws there for blind people, trust me. The reason I felt the ACB cruise was stifling was I felt there were way too many meetings. And again, it was probably partly at least due to the people that were involved, the Slaters. I wanted to go up and hang out on the deck and they were meeting all the time, it seemed like, more than the average. And I just felt and the other thing that happened was I wanted to swim with the dolphins in Jamaica in particular. And I was standing in line. I was going to book the tour myself and Dave, the guy that runs the tomorrow. So I'll do it for you. Well, turns out by the time he got around to getting the tickets, they were all gone. So I felt kind of slighted on that. And I just decided, next time I go on an ACB cruise, I will do more of making my own arrangements and not worry so much about tomorrow. They may not like that, but that's just the way it'll be. I guess I just don't make a very good blind person. I do not like the kind of regimentation that many times goes with the groups of the blind. So long explanation for a short answer, I guess. I'll let it go.
This is Alice. I have to admit, I kind of liked going with the group with ACB. Unlike Dave, we really didn't seem to, they had some scheduled activities, that were strictly, for our group, but that was okay. But most of the rest of the time, we were pretty much on our own. The day that before we disembarked, we all went to the main meeting where everybody met, and they told you the cruise director told you what you had to do to be able to get off the ship the next day. And then afterwards we met with Damar, but that was so they could help us to fill out all the documentation paperwork, which I found helpful. But as far as tours and stuff, they did, which I was kind of glad, being in a strange country sometimes, you're glad to have somebody along with you. So they did kind of make sure that, an agent from Damar went with us on the tours. But you pretty much picked, and I picked most of the things I wanted to do as far as the excursions before I went. So I went ahead and I purchased my own tickets. Now, the one thing that bothered me a little bit with the travel, and this didn't happen to me, but, and I don't know the answer to this, and like somebody said, when you're in another country, you're not covered by the ADA, so. But one of the girls in our group was from Tennessee, and she's an avid white water rafter. And when we got to Costa Rica, that was one of the tours, and she wanted to take the tour. And they basically just downright told her no because she was blind that she could not do the white water rafting. And I thought that was kind of a bummer and a bad deal. She was an experienced white water rafter. She does it all the time, but they absolutely refused to let her, because of liability purposes. But I have to admit that I was not too disappointed by going as a group. I kind of enjoyed it. Was a little difficult sometimes at the dinner table, though, because at the table I was at, there were five guide dogs, so it was a little crowded at dinner time.
Okay, I was not on the ACB cruise,
But I believe that if we're going to have a convention on a cruise, let's plan a convention on a cruise. If we're going to plan an ACB cruise without the convention, let's do that.
Well, it's an interesting idea, Karen. When I was president of ACB, we actually talked about it a little bit, and we found that there were a number of issues that made it tough. First, we thought that perhaps 435 dogs would tax even the most willing ship. And second, there were so many of the activities that are associated with our conventions that require space, that even the most capacious cruise ship just would not have enough spaces for all of the activities that are associated with our convention to happen on a ship. So while it's not a bad idea, in fact, I would kind of like it, it isn't likely to happen. I want to ask an obvious question, and I guess I'm going to start with Alice, and then other people who'd like to chime in can certainly do that. One of the questions that some of our listeners are probably asking is, how did they accommodate your guide dog on the cruise, and was that accommodation effective, or should people who use guide dogs be a little concerned about that?
What they did was actually kind of a novel idea, but what they did was I actually took a cabin with a balcony because of the fact that I was taking my dog. And so a lot of us who had dogs, there were 24 dogs on this cruise. There were 99 people from ACB and 24 guide dogs. And so they took these little wading, you know, those tiny wading pools, put it on the patio, and then they put some kind of pellet things in there, and apparently they were, from the way somebody described them to me, like old recycled newspaper that were rolled up with some kind of chemical thing. Well, some of the dogs did real well with this. Now, I have to admit, Sidian was not real thrilled. I mean, he got in it, he'd sit in it and just wag his tail. He thought, well, this is kind of cool to make noise, wag your tail, but did not want to park. So they did that for those of us who had balcony rooms. Then what they did was on decks 3 and 4, which deck 3 was where the lifeboats were, they also, again, set up like a fiberglass box that had these pellets and a couple of other wading pools. And then in one place they put down AstroTurf, but then again they covered it with the pellets. Well, Sidian just wanted no part of it. So needless to say, Sidian refused to go to the bathroom for 3 days. And for me that was very disconcerting because I'd never had a dog where I had an issue with parking anywhere I took it. And I have to admit though too, this was my first time taking a guide dog on a cruise. Before when I had cruised, the first time we ever cruised, we kenneled the dogs, and after that it was just too traumatic, and I said I would never do anything again where I couldn't take my dog. And so unfortunately, Sidian did have an accident. He held it almost till we were off the ship, but the line was so long going down the steps out the door, and he didn't make it. That was a little embarrassing for me because it's something that I pride myself on, but what I asked them to do was to please put down another piece of AstroTurf and not put the pellets on it, because I said, I think, you know, if the pellets aren't there, some of the dogs would do better. And sure enough, that was the case for City. And when it was just straight AstroTurf, then he started parking. And of course, then every time we hit land, we made sure that we were able to get out real quick.
Goliath was the only dog on his cruise ships, on his cruises, so it was a little different than this. I did not take him on the ACB cruise. He was already retired. And the first time, it was the short cruise, the 3 day cruise, and from LA to Ensenada, it's about a 200, maximum 200 mile round, a 300 mile round trip, I guess. They had a piece of AstroTurf carpeting up on the top deck, up where the nude sunbathers go, actually. And so it worked out for him. He wasn't sure. He said, wait a minute. First, you don't want me to go on carpet. Now you want me to go on carpet. This is strange. But he finally figured out that this, in fact, was okay. And then like Alice, when we hit land, boy, he was ready. And in Alaska, on the Alaska cruise, again, he was the only guide dog, and so it's a little different. They had a doggy box, basically, like a kind of sand. I'm not even sure what was in there. And they put it under a flight of stairs that was on the rear deck. And that was okay, except that the actual deck, the whole of the deck, was covered by the AstroTurf that he used when he was on the other ship. So basically, a couple times, he'd relieve right on the carpet, and I put it in the bag and put it in the box. Well, then he finally got the idea. Okay, oh, you want me to go in the box this time? All right, whatever you say. He finally got that. And again, when we went, when we went to land, you know, on land, he was there. I will say this: if I paid the extra for balcony room, I would not want my balcony to be taken up by Doggy Relief. I would probably have gone to Dick's 3 and 4, just my own choice. But probably, if there were that many guide dogs, I would leave mine at home. I don't think if I knew he was going to be the only dog or the only one, maybe two or three, I would take him. But in a group, you know, I'm comfortable with my cane. I would I'd leave the dog at home myself. That's the way I'd handle it.
One of the things that I thought might be interesting is there are a number of folks who have joined us this evening who so far haven't been heard from and who aren't regulars on Tuesday Topics. Would one of you like to tell us a little bit about some of your experiences as a traveler? And first, tell us who you are and where you're from.
I'm Lisa Hall from San Antonio, Texas. I've been a traveler for several years, going to the NFB National Convention and that kind of thing. I even moved from Louisiana to Texas over 10 years ago. And I once was in Arkansas one time during the Christmas holidays and couldn't take the bus home, so I had to fly. And that was back in 1983 in December. And I've been flying every year ever since.
Cool. Thanks very much, Lisa.
This is Diane. And I'm in Georgia, and my dream is one day to take a cruise. And we had heard that ACB was going to do the Alaskan cruise next year, and have found out that unfortunately they're not going to do it. But my husband always says, talking about Staten Island, that he's taken me on several cruises because we went across to Staten Island on the ferry.
All right. Hi, this is Larry Turnbull in Orlando, and I guess thinking about all the times I've traveled quite a bit, and I guess the thing I can think of is the most unique trip was one I took a long time ago in the late 80s out to Yellowstone Park in Wyoming. That was really an experience in itself, seeing the different kinds of landscape and all the wonders of nature. It was real interesting to see a geyser in action, you know, just a hole in the ground shooting steam out of it. Old Faithful did that about every hour at the time, and there was a few other geysers that did it at different time cycles. Some shot higher than others, some we really had to stand back. And also seeing the hot springs, and there was also a trail there, you know, that had different types of trees and all that. And they had a rope that they strung along the edge of the trail. And about every 10 feet or so, they had a braille sign there that would explain the different trees that were around and what the history of them was, and also how long they've been there. And that was really an interesting trip. Anyone who ever likes enjoying nature, that's a place to go, is Yellowstone Park. And also did some whitewater rafting down the Gallatin River in Montana.
Dave was not with me, but this is before we got together. My aunt and uncle lived in Colonial Heights, Virginia, just outside of historic Petersburg, one of the great battlefields of the Civil War. There was also a Braille Trail. Unfortunately, people decided they liked to take the Braille plaques for souvenirs, so the Braille Trail kind of went away. Now, on that same plane trip I've been talking about, we did go to historic Petersburg, and due to some inclement weather further on down the state of Virginia, we got a wonderful chance to have practically a private tour from one of the park rangers. There were two, there was ourselves and one other group of four or five people. And why they showed us, he let us handle a musket. In fact, we have recordings, tapes of the explanations and the film that they show regarding the Battle of Petersburg, or the Siege of Petersburg. And it was very, very, very interesting. It's kind of sad to think that the Braille Trail was gone, but at least we got to enjoy the Petersburg experience. And then they had a sutler's store. What they called the sutlers were people who were merchants. And so they have sort of a replica of their store where we can purchase things. and it was a lot of fun.
This is Rachel in Orlando. Wow, it's hard to get a word in. So while I have the floor, I'll tell you a couple quick stories. One of them, you know, we talk about interesting things that blind people would kind of get a kick out of. I wish I could remember the name of this tour, but when I was in Philadelphia about 5 years ago, went to this really neat kind of historical presentation. You basically walked around downtown Philadelphia at night, and what they did is they had some kind of lights reflected on the buildings, on all the historical buildings, and then they had an audio presentation with it, and it gave like some of the historical, detailed kind of events and things that happened in Philadelphia. It was really neat, but the neat thing about it was the audio presentation came over headphones, so if you chose to do it, you would get these headphones. So we're walking around, and I have my guide dog, and my husband's with me, and the sound was in kind of like this virtual reality thing, whereas if you're walking around with the headphones, you're hearing some of the, you know, kind of realistic sounds that they put in the background. And I remember one time we're walking, and the story goes on as you walk from place to place. You have each scene happens at a building, and then you walk from place to place, and the story kind of continues as you're walking. And I remember we were walking, and I had the headphones on, and I have a guide dog, so I obviously can't hear anything outside of the headphones, which really probably isn't a very good idea with the guide dog, but I did have a sighted person with me. And next thing I know, I hear these horses coming up alongside of me. And the funny thing is, because it was virtual reality, it sounded like it was right there. And just kind of instinctively, I moved. I'm like, that's really stupid. What am I moving for? But it was so real sounding. You know, obviously my dog was going to watch out for this stuff. But of course, I wasn't thinking that at the time. So it was really neat. But anyway, it's like a lighted tour in Philadelphia. The other thing that's totally non-related, talking about, you know, kind of the treatment you get on planes and trains and automobiles, whatever. I went to the airport to take a flight out a few years ago, and we had a friend with us who was just kind of coming along for the ride as they were taking me to the airport. And I had tried to get a bulkhead seat to go with my dog, and they couldn't get me a bulkhead seat. So they said, well, the best we can do is just have you tell them at the gate when you go. Okay, fine. So taking my chances, I get to the gate. And the friend that was with us, somebody comes up to him that he knew. And basically, what happens if you try to get a bulkhead seat and you can't get that, they'll either put you in coach, or if you're really lucky, they'll give you a first class seat. So she comes up and she starts talking to him, and she says, oh, it was you. You're the reason I got a first class seat. And I'm like, what are you talking about? Because I had tried to get a first class seat and they wouldn't do it. And she says, well, they said that you needed the bulkhead, so they moved me up into first class. And I said, oh, gee, for that, you at least owe me a drink, you know, just kind of joking around. And we went our separate ways. And most of the way through the flight, the flight attendant comes back and she says, there's a lady in first class who wants to send you back a drink. And I just started laughing. Of course, I wasn't going to take it. It was only 10 o'clock in the morning. So it was kind of funny. So I didn't take it. But it's just funny. It's a small world when you travel sometimes. And the very thing I was trying to do, somebody else benefited from. But it all worked out because I got bulkhead in the end.
One of the things that that I thought it might be interesting to do just before we wind down is one of the things that many blind people are concerned about when they determine that they're going to travel is how they're going to be treated by security. How is the airport security in the airport, or the security that operates for customs with cruises, going to operate? So perhaps some folks could provide some feedback to people who might be planning to travel about how security does or doesn't work.
Well, this is Alice, and as most of us know anyway who fly, it's hit and miss depending on the airport. When we were going to Washington, D.C., for example, this year to the legislative seminar, when I got to the airport in Jacksonville, they wanted me to sit my dog and me go through and then them bring my dog through. And I said, I am not letting go of my dog. Well, then we'll have to wind you. And I said, well, you're going to wind me anyway. And which they did. Well, one of the other girls that was with me, she did what they asked. And it still didn't matter. They still winded her anyway and made her take off her shoes. So as far as with customs in the ship, they made sure, you know, they told us ahead of time to have all of our documentation and paperwork out. And we did, and it was pretty smooth. And I guess, again, that was because we went with a group. So as a group, you know, we kind of got through pretty quickly. You know, they just looked at the paperwork of the dog, talked about how beautiful the dog was, and just asked a couple of questions, and that was it. So I found it pretty easy. Now, I don't know what it would have been like if I'd have gone just with my dog, you know, and somebody else as a friend on a cruise, but the fact that we were with a group, it was pretty smooth.
Most times I haven't had a problem with security. One time I was a lucky person picked at random to go through the extra, you know, taking off the shoes and looking through the bags. And, of course, my dad was with me, and I kind of had to talk him into going to the airport with me in the first place. So I was like, oh, that's it. He's never going to do this again. But most of the time going through security, what I found is even though they've been trained generally as to how to work with the people with the guide dogs, I found that if I kind of tell them, okay, here's what I'd like to do, here's how I'd like to do it if that works for you. And it seems to kind of ease their minds a bit as far as the awkwardness of wondering, okay, well, yeah, I have a job to do and I have to do it, but I don't want to do anything unnecessarily. So I think if you just kind of maintain some open communication with them and say, okay, here's what I can do. I can extend the dog leash and go through security, and I'll call the dog through. And yes, it's going to set off the alarm, but, you know, feel free to do whatever you feel you need to do. And if you maintain that open communication, chances are they're going to talk back with you, you know, joke around, laugh, whatever. And it makes it so much less awkward. But, you know, there are always those times where, you know, they're just strictly, okay, here's what we have to do, and you know, no way around it. But most of the time, I really haven't had a problem going through security. Been perfectly fine. One thing I would mention on the subject of airports, too, I could just be opening up something completely different here, but it is something to consider and be prepared for, and be prepared with a response, is that, this better not happen to me in a few weeks as I fly out either. is that when you get off the plane and you need assistance at the airport, some airports, this has happened to me several times, where in this country and in the UK, where they will require that they bring a wheelchair. If you ask for assistance, it's kind of like, the standard that if you say call 911, you're going to get a police car, you're going to get an ambulance, you're going to get a fire truck. It doesn't matter what the situation is. I guess they use kind of the same idea, that regardless of what assistance you say you need in order to get from one flight to another, or to get from your flight to the baggage, that they're going to bring a wheelchair. Well, you know, if I've been on a 10-hour flight, such was the case last year, that was the last thing I wanted to do, was take a wheelchair. And I had to really try hard to convince them, hey, you know, I can walk, I'm just blind. There were a couple people that I've dealt with that they said, well, yes, you know, we are required to bring a wheelchair, but heck, if you want to walk, we'll just throw your suitcase in it. Well, that was fine with me, no problem. One person practically insisted that I use the wheelchair, even though I had a dog, and I said, absolutely not. They said, well, the dog can walk alongside. I said, no, the dog cannot walk alongside. I will be walking with my dog. I do not need the wheelchair. You know, and some people, you really have to be, nice but firm with them. Yes, I can walk. I do not need the chair. I would prefer not to. If you have to have it, then that's fine, but I'm walking. So those kind of things you just need to be prepared for. And, you know, don't let it throw you. And, last year I was really frustrated because I had that same situation. And not only did the guy bring a wheelchair, he was a person that didn't speak English very well. So that was a not a great thing to come home to the States to, but, you know, we did manage to get through it. But those are just the kinds of things that I think we're going to continue to have to deal with, and we just need to be prepared that those kind of things are going to happen, and know how we're going to handle those. Meanwhile, get in touch with the airport authorities to let them know that if this is not the kind of assistance we need, that they're just adding extra work to themselves to bring it.
Part of the issue with the whole wheelchair thing is that almost always airlines contract with other companies, and they're generally companies who pay the minimum wage or worse, because there's an expectation that people will actually end up making more money with tips. So contacting the airport authorities really doesn't do a lot of good. The only thing that you can really do is to contact the airline and lodge a complaint. And I have had to do that on a couple of occasions because I've had wheelchair people actually decide that if I'm not going to ride in their wheelchair, they're just going to leave me and the hell with me. The only good thing that came out of it is I got a free ticket. So that was fine if that's the way people want to play. The other thing that you probably need to at least be aware of that will happen when you fly is there is a general expectation that because you're blind, you're going to stay on the plane until everybody else has gotten off. If you have a close connection, be aware that you're going to have to talk with the stewardess and indicate to her that, or flight attendant, and indicate to her that, or him, that you have a close connection and you really would appreciate being allowed off sooner. And many times the folks will respond to that in a favorable way. On other occasions, however, I've had them say, no, you're handicapped and you need to stay till last, and that's that. And on a couple of occasions, I've missed flights, and the airlines have had to put me up overnight and have had to buy me a free ticket and have had to buy lots of meals because essentially I put it to supervisors that I had that while I'm prepared to stay on the plane till last most of the time, when I ask occasionally for a little bit of a break from that, I think it's an appropriate and reasonable request, and they've agreed with me.
Well, a couple of things I would say too. A lot of times when you get on the plane, the flight attendants are really good about coming back and saying, okay, the nearest exit is four rows behind you and to the left or whatever it is. If they don't do that, make it a point to ask them because that's always, first off, it could very well, you know, be a safety issue should you need it. Second off, it kind of reminds them to think about those kinds of things. You know, that if there's someone blind on board, that kind of thing should be described to them. Or, you know, if you can't get a flight attendant, you know, you can always ask the passengers nearby. But those kind of things, most flight attendants think to do, but some of them don't. The other thing I would say is when you get to an airport and you're trying to make connecting flights, what tends to happen, or at least what's happened to me on occasion, is one person will help me get from point A to point B. The next person will take over, kind of like a relay race, you know, to get from point B to point C. When you start, it's always a good idea, at least I've found it's always a good idea. At least I feel more in control. You always, I guess my main point here in any of these comments that I've said is that whatever you do, you know, try to maintain control of the situation. And part of maintaining that control is always know the name of the person that you're working with. Always try to know the name of the person that is giving you that assistance. If they're going to hand you off to somebody, then, you know, let them know. Say, okay, if you're going to have me go with somebody else, don't just leave and assume that I know that I'm supposed to be following this net person, because, you know, the airports are crowded. You don't know who you're following. And so make sure that the people that are working with you identify themselves. Make sure that you know that you're kind of being handed off to the second or third person. It's just a matter of safety and I always like to try and think of it in a positive sense, and that if I'm being handed off to somebody and I find out that that person has done a really great job, I'll definitely remember their name and try to, you know, get word to their supervisor that they did a great job. So there's positives in that, too.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hate to cut this short, but we've actually been going on for quite a length of time. I think that we have managed to cover a lot of issues with regard to travel. I appreciate everybody joining us, and I appreciate the contributions of all of those of us who were here in the Tuesday Topics Room this evening. I'd like to thank Rachel and Larry in Orlando for their recording. I'd particularly like to thank Dave Williams for his masterful job of editing, which I know he's going to do on this particular project. I'd like to thank George Byes for making this software available to ACP. And I'd like to thank all of you who tuned in tonight for Tuesday Topics on ACB Radio, connecting the blind community. Good night. Jamie is a gentleman in St. Petersburg who newly lost his vision, and it was decided by Extreme Makeover that it would be appropriate for them to extremely make over his house so that it would be friendly for people who are blind. Join us next week on Tuesday Topics to see whether those of us who are there think that the makeover was friendly or whether the makeover was in fact too extreme. Join us next week then for Tuesday Topics, when we have extreme discussion about extreme makeover on ACB Radio, connecting the blind community.